Hi, I'm Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen. I'm a personal functional medicine practitioner for high performers and professional athletes. And I've worked with athletes in many different sports, from the U.S. sailing team to endurance sports and triathlon, CrossFit, and professional tennis players across the board in any sport. Maintaining a foundation of a healthy body and mind is crucial for long-term success. This is the podcast that will show you how to apply the principles of a healthy body and mindset to achieve high performance, all from the inside out. This is the Fit and Healthy Athlete Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Fit and Healthy Athlete Podcast. I am so excited for today because I have a very special guest with us. Her name is Dr. Janika Benoit. She goes by Dr. J. Dr. J and Dr. K are in the house today, and I'm like so excited about it. She is a board certified internal medicine physician and also a sports medicine specialist. She helps and mostly focuses on helping professional women with a history of chronic illness and disease to develop a life that they are in control of, and of also of their own health and fitness and finding their own wellness. So Dr. J, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to start our conversation.
It's going to be really fun. So first off, give us an introduction. How did you get into what you're doing now? Who do you work with? Just give us an intro of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I can say this journey, I can actually track back to one specific day. I was a second year internal medicine resident at this time. And I remember just having like this really stressful clinic day, just feeling stretched in so many directions. And I remember, walking into my house, coming in, not even saying hello to my family members, and going straight up to my bedroom. And I sat on my bed, and I remember sitting on my bed asking God, like, what is my purpose? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? How can I really truly help my patients, find their own health? And my mind was tracking back to, earlier that day. And I just, was envisioning me sitting on that computer and opening up my patient's chart and what seemed like this never ending list of medications. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like, this is just not true health. And all I can remember is the click of my mouse, just going click, 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 click. And that was me clicking all the medicines that I had to refill for that patient. And I was like, there has to be a better way so that I'm not clicking and clicking and clicking and clicking. And I remember, my journey, my pre-medical student journey is just interviewing various osteopathic medical schools. And I remember standing in the lobby of this osteopathic medical school and looking up at the wall. And up at the wall, it was, this quote written in white cursive letters against this wooden background. And I saw the author of the quote was Andrew Taylor Still, who's the founder of osteopathic medicine. That quote read, "The object of a physician is to find health. Anyone can find disease." And, as an internal medicine, I was caring for, a lot of people with chronic diseases, type 2 diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease. And I knew that there was so much more that I can help them with rather than just saying, okay, you have to eat healthy and exercise more. Like, I really wanted to figure out a way to help influence behavior. If I could just help them just change their behaviors and learn how to develop habits that can find their, so that they can find their own health and fitness, like, I know that that is my purpose. So that is what led me to the journey of creating MedFitDO, where I serve as a health and fitness coach, and I primarily serve busy professional women with family histories of chronic disease, find their own health and fitness.
Yeah. Oh, I just love that. Can you, I need that quote like on my wall because that is such a good one. And I feel like, I actually think this is really interesting because I didn't go that route of going to be an osteopathic doctor. I went the route of being a chiropractor, and Sometimes I've wondered if that actually was the right choice, but at the same time, there's a lot of overlap in the way that we look at the body and we look at just, you know, we try, I think, in many ways to see it as health. How do we promote health? How do we promote fitness? How do we not go down this road of just disease, disease, disease? Let's just cover something up. Let's put something on top and like, you'll feel better tomorrow. How do we actually create that habit change? I think that is such a great quote that if everybody could just remember that one thing, it would have such a big impact on the health of our country and the health of people everywhere in the world. Tell me this, or let's for our listeners and viewers, what's the difference between a DO and an MD?
Yeah, that's so good. So DO, so really the difference comes to different philosophies. So in osteopathic medicine, we have a philosophy of how we view the human body. I think the one tenet that encompasses all is that the body is composed of different parts, mind, body, spirit. Also another tenet is that, you know, the body has the ability to heal itself, right? We have an innate immunity, and that has that assists us in, you know, just helping ourselves heal. And also structure influences function too. And in osteopathic medical school, I took an additional course that MDs don't take, and that is learning about osteopathic manipulative treatment. And, you know, we learn how to just like impact the tissues and the joints to also influence the function of the way that the systems in our body function so that we can help create optimal health. Mm-hmm. So although I don't, perform OMT or osteopathic manipulative treatment, I still carry that philosophy with me. You know, I carry it, you know, when I'm in the clinic with my patient, realizing that, you know, it's not that, you know, they're a person, they're composed of all these different components, mind, body, and spirit. And I take that with me. I take that when I'm on a coaching call with my client and realizing this is a human body composed of all these different parts. And, I've learned how to learn how to speak to not only the human, but also their spirit. And I've learned how to, tap into that and help them recognize like what their inherent needs are so that they can find what motivates them to develop an optimal, healthy and fit life.
Oh, I love that. I think to drive that home a little bit about what you talked about as far as function goes and about the body, I'll just kind of connect that a little bit. It's very common, especially from like the chiropractic side of things, to still hear the, oh, I think my rib is out, or oh, I think my joint is out. When you actually look at function, it's a different model now that we're looking at. And it's not that joints get out of place. It's that things happen that can make certain joints get stuck. It changes their function. But here's the thing, and this is where from what you were just talking about, where this is really important as it comes to health of the entire body. And I think where that innate immune system tends to come from, as well as the way that chiropractic tends to look at it, which is if you can remove something in the system that's causing the body not to be able to do its job, all we have to do is remove that thing and the body should be able to restore itself back to function and health. But keep in mind that, like, let's say you have, well, I think women in particular experience this on a level, some do, where, you know, if you have your period and you get cramping, you might also notice you get low back pain at around that certain time of the month. Think about it like this. If you have something like a chronic illness in a muscle or in an organ, or you have chronic pain or chronic symptoms in your gut or anywhere else in the body, you might move differently because there's pain there. That's then potentially going to influence how your back moves. That's potentially going to then influence how the rest of your body moves. So sometimes people will have stories where they, you know, saw a DO or they saw a chiropractor, they got adjusted and then things started to improve. And part of it is just remembering that the entire body and systems are connected. It's not ever just about one thing. There's many different things often happening all at the same time. And it's very common for people to go into specialties. So we only see it through the perspective of like GI health, or we only see it through the perspective of brain and neurological, you know, symptoms and health and things like that. But with cardiovascular disease, with hypertension and blood pressure, high blood pressure, and anything that happens in the system, hormone imbalances, they're all connected. There's a lot of different things that are often happening at the same time. I'm curious, what made you want to go into the specialty of sports medicine?
Yeah, you've actually echoed a lot of the things that I'm about to tell you.
Yeah, so, I know, it's because we get each other.
Yeah, we are like such kindred spirits. I just love it all. So yeah, what made me go into sports medicine, that's exactly, you know, what you stated, because in internal medicine, so, you know, there's different routes. So you can stay in internal medicine, you can do outpatient. So that means you work in a clinic, and or you can become a hospitalist and then work in the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, my problem with working in the outpatient setting was, you know, just the constant refill of medications. I just, you know, I just didn't see myself doing that. And also in the hospital, you know, it's very, you deal with acute issues and then you discharge them, and then someone else, they have an acute issue and then you discharge them. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to help people in the long term with their health. Like I wanted to, you know, be their guide and help them, you know, throughout their, you know, the journey of like how to develop habits to sustain their health and to improve their health.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't go the hospital last route. So then you can also subspecialize. You could, you know, there's different various internal medicine subspecialties. There's cardiology, rheumatology, you know, there's different types. And my thing was what you just stated is I didn't want to be too laser focused on just one organ system, because I realized that, you know, the body is a system, just, you know, from my osteopathic medical school training, that the body is a system and it's composed of all these different, you know, parts. And, you know, I know that how structure influences function. And I really wanted to just learn the body as a whole. And that's what I wanted to stick with. So I wanted to sports medicine because even though, yes, we focus on muscle, joints, and tendons, but still, you know, not every shoulder pain is a musculoskeletal shoulder pain. It could be, related to our heart. It can be from our gallbladder. It could be from our, you know, pancreas. So, you know, and that's the versatility that comes with sports medicine as well. And also I love exercise. I love physical activity, and sports medicine is very diverse. We see athletes, we see, you know, your regular just laborers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different types of quote unquote athletes that you see. So I love the diversity of the patient population as well. I just, you know, love teaching people just how to like care for themselves, how to care for their body, especially like, you know, if you are, you know, a laborer and you're overusing your bodies, like, you know, I want to be able to teach you, okay, various methods, or, you know, and various, just like even thoughts and behaviors that you can start to incorporate in your daily job so that you don't overuse, you know, your muscles and your tendons, and yes, also teaching you various exercises. Because we talked about immunity and how the body can heal itself, of how you can help to just take care of your tendons, you know, properly, so that you don't overuse them to a point where now your tendons don't even know how to revert back to its original state. So,
yes.
And I just, you know, I just love like, just like being a teacher. So it gives me time to just like explain, and it gives me time, you know, with my patient to just, you know, talk about all of that stuff. And I really, really do enjoy it. And I know that it works because, you know, my patients tell me, well, thank you so much for taking the time to explain that for me. So that's the reason why I went into sports medicine.
Oh, I love it. Isn't it amazing how just taking a little bit of extra time is all some people need to just be told, like, hey, let's work on this together. Let's be a partner in this. And like, here's why this is really important. And sometimes that's all it takes in order to just help empower them to make those changes, which is like, I mean, you'll impact somebody's life forever. It's so cool. It's such a great position to be in.
Yeah, it is so, you know, honestly, like, you know, I think every day I'm so honored and so privileged to do this work. It really, it means the world to me because I know that, like, I was purposed to do this work, you know, the time, you know, that I take, the joy that I have to explain to somebody about, like, what's going on in their body and, you know, how they can help improve themselves just brings me so much peace and so much joy. And just makes me feel so purposeful. And to hear their feedback on it is it's just you know, affirmation. It's and you know, at the end of the day, you know, patients, they want to feel like, you know, they're being listened to. And I feel that that's a gift that I have, is learning. And I'm also learning how to you know, perfect that too, and just like learning to, well, nothing's really perfect, but learning how to improve upon that. You know, I love it.
Oh, I just love all of it. I feel like we could just camp on that for an entire episode. But one of the things that I would love to talk about today, that we have a couple of topics on this episode that we're going to cover, but one of them is, we were discussing over our communication before this about some of the difficulties, maybe some of the challenges that, that basically, like, I think in school, I think you mentioned you created a research abstract about, and it was through a survey in sports medicine about the running participation of our Black communities, and that there isn't always a lot of that participation in, I think, just running, but maybe in sports in general. And it sounded like it might have something to do with communities. And I would love to talk about this a little bit more, because ethnicity, improving ethnicity and diversity in sports, I think is something that's a really critical topic to talk about. I can just say from experience of just doing some more work, especially over the last couple of years, what one of the barriers that our state was talking about here in Oregon is that there's a huge barrier of entry to seeing Black people out in hiking and enjoying the outdoors, and discussing why that is and where some of that just challenge is coming from. So I'd love to have and facilitate this conversation today. Can you give a little bit of background to the barriers that some people experience as far as getting into sport, getting into running, that you've noticed and maybe came out of some of the survey that you did?
Yeah. I thank you so much for, you know, just starting this conversation. I think it's, you know, so important, you know, just for the Black community as a whole to realize, just like how connected, more connected that we can be with our bodies. So, to tell you about my research abstract, I did this during my sports medicine fellowship, and I, did my sports medicine fellowship at Meharry Medical College, which is a historically Black college and university. And I wanted to do a research abstract based on the barriers to running participation within the Black community. Because what I saw from my experience growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and living in that community, I did not think that Black people ran. And I remember being 16 years old in my junior high school, we did not have a cross country track program. And I have to give a shout out to Mr. Lawler, who started a cross country track program at our high school. And my friend, you know, was going to join, and, you know, my friend, was also Black, and she said, "Hey, Janika, I'm going to join the cross country, track, program that Mr. Lawler just set up." And I looked at her and I'm like, "What?" I'm like, Black people run? I'm like, is that a thing? And she's like, yeah, like, let's join. I'm like, oh, okay, like, let's join. But prior to that, I never, ever considered running. And just like growing up in Brooklyn, New York, a lot, every time I saw a runner, they were predominantly white. So I did not see myself as a runner because I did not see people around me running. So when he, started the program and I started to run, my life just changed. Like, honestly, I don't even know like who I would be prior to becoming a runner because I realized there's just so much freedom and liberation in moving your limbs so yes. rhythmically, you know, just, you know, feeling your feet touch the pavement, you know, learning how to control your breath. I become most creative when I'm running. My business was built from a run. The name was built from a, I'm so serious. Like the name was built from a run. I'm so, so creative. And I feel like, you know, when I run, I am like this, you know, this like enhanced version of myself. And I was, you know, really, really so grateful for Mr. Lawler for, you know, starting this cross country track program.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as I've gotten older, I've realized the importance of, you know, bringing the Black community along to, you know, consider running if you haven't considered running before, because back when I was 16 years old in high school, like I never considered running. And I like now, like I have so much gratitude to running. And I understand the importance of, you know, developing, you know, solidarity in running within the Black community, such as, you know, with Black Girls Run and One Girl Co and Black Men Run. And yeah. also like just, you know, making this a collective conversation right. so that we can also, you know, have, you know, allies in part of this and, yeah. you know, breaking down the stigma of, you know, Black people don't run. Because even as I was growing up, some of the things that I heard was, oh, I don't run unless I'm getting chased by a cop, or I don't run unless I'm getting chased, right? So it's, you know, shifting, let's like learning how to shift that conversation and learning that, you know, we can, you know, run together, that yeah. we can, you know, it doesn't have to be something that you're running away from. Okay. It could be something that you're running to, like you're running toward the highest version of yourself. Like you're running toward, you know, breaking stigmas and, you know, breaking limiting beliefs. It's, you know, changing that conversation, changing that perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just as a Black, you know, physician, as a Black woman physician, as a Black woman runner, you know, I would encourage, you know, people, you know, Black people and also white people who are, you know, who are allies to like make this a collective movement, you yeah. know, and incorporating us to collectively run together. And so, yeah, so that's how I, you know, got on this journey. But I know you mentioned about the abstract. So I kind of like went over that. So in my abstract, just to let you know, it was a survey study that I did during my sports medicine fellowship. And what I explained before was just like my impetus and my motivation for creating the abstract.
Right.
So that's where, you know, the heart and my why came for creating this abstract in the first place. And, you know, given that I was working with a predominantly Black community, I wanted to figure out, okay, what are the barriers that are in the way to like why we are not, you know, sometimes we're least represented in the running community based on where you are, based on the community. And it was a very small sample size, but, you know, it still was significant because what I found from the results that I gathered was that a lack of interest in running and also, lack of interest and also not having access to running paths were a barrier. And the barriers were constructed based on the public health belief model, and that is an instrument that looks at the way that our beliefs impact our exercise or our ability to exercise. And, you know, just to backtrack, there are different beliefs that impact our like motivation to exercise. And some of them are, you know, our perceived benefit, like, you know, with us thinking, okay, am I going to benefit? And do I think I'm gonna achieve a benefit, you know, from exercise? Do I think that this is going to help prevent chronic disease? Or is this going to help lower my cholesterol or help lower my blood pressure?
Sure.
Also the objective barriers too. And some of that in my study were, okay, well, you know, I'm embarrassed to run. Or, you know, there are a lot of people who don't look like me who run, or I don't have enough time to run. Also our self-efficacy, like our confidence in believing that, okay, we can do this successfully. So I was able to, you know, construct the barriers in that way. And just to reiterate, I saw that the top barriers were not having access to running paths and not having interest.
Okay.
And, you know, I can, you know, attest to that because I didn't have interest in running.
Right.
Until with the Waller, I decided to create a cross-country track program. And my, you know, my friend who's Black also said that she was going to join. And another thing that I saw was that was interesting that households that made less than $25,000 a year had lack of time
sure.
as a barrier as well. And though it was a very small sample size, it's still significant because this helps just change the conversation around just like, you know, physical activity and exercise, because it doesn't do a service to say, okay, well, you don't run or you don't exercise, but it's also like learning to ask more questions and learning to find out what is in the way. What are, you know, the barriers that you have? What are, you know, the limitations that you think you may have? And let's talk them through. Let me like guide you and let me help you. And, you know, you do that by just asking questions. So, you know, I thought this was very just, you know, an important something for also for me to keep mindful of, you know, as a physician dealing with, you know, being various patients. And I'm always, you know, promoting physical activity and also just good nutrition. And it's a reminder to me to learn how to be curious and learn to find out what are those barriers in the way. And then how can I help you? How can I help you overcome some of those barriers?
Right. So I'm hearing a lot that has much to do with community, with the people that are around you. I do feel like that does play a really big role in us doing anything. You know, if we're surrounded by people who typically go out to eat and drink a lot, that might, you know, promote that type of, you know, those habits. Whereas if you're around a lot of people like your friend who said, hey, let's join this running club, or this running track and field team, that might facilitate you, you know, to go that route. So part of what I'm hearing is definitely, being active in our communities is one way to remove some of those barriers. But also though, as far as just, asking more questions and being more aware of some of the barriers that people may have to getting some fitness in any way, shape, or form, are there some things that you've found to be really helpful, when some of those barriers come up, as far as like, what can we do to, I know that they're going to be very specific to certain people, but one of the things I've seen in my practice, at least, is that there's some general themes, you know, that typically kind of come up. Are there some things that you found have been really helpful? First off, for being sensitive to those barriers and some of those things that I may not have ever experienced or understand, but can still help to guide them towards being more fit and being more active. What are some of the things that you found that have been really helpful in that scenario?
Yeah, I think something that has been really helpful for me and just, you know, the way that I practice, the way that I coach, is being aware of our limiting beliefs and what
yes.
holds us back. Oh. And just bringing them to the forefront.
Yes.
Because, you know, we have, you know, all these beliefs that go through in our mind all the time, and we don't realize how much it is holding us back. So for example, I was actually speaking to one of my patients about, you know, running, and she told me that, you know, I don't run, and, you know, I'm likely going to get, you know, hypertension because it runs in my family. And yeah. And it's like, you know, we're already just holding ourselves captive already.
Yes.
And I don't think that she was privy to that. I think it's just like, this is the way that I think. And you become so accustomed to the way that you think that you don't realize that it is a detriment to your health. Mm. So, you know, the fact that she mentioned it and I highlighted it, and I, you know, I repeated it back to her, but then asked her questions about it, so that she can become more self-aware of the captivity that she's placing on herself.
Yes.
You know, it was like eureka, like mind break, like mind blowing, like, oh my goodness. Like I have, like, I'm actually in control here. Like I don't have to repeat history. Mm-hmm. I can take matters into my own hands and create small habits that will allow me to become healthy and fit so that I can change the trajectory of my life. And not only do you change the trajectory of your life, but then you also impact those generations to come, because you are starting healthy habits. Whereas like before, you didn't have an example of that, but now you can start the example and you can propagate that throughout your generation. And, mm-hmm. although I love, talking about health and fitness, but, you know, also I think it's important to, you know, serve as an example for our generations to come as well. And I love talking about, you know, we hear generational wealth all the time. I love talking about generational health.
Yes. Because,
because, you know, the thing is, like, when we see like what our parents do, like we then do the same things, right? Because it's like we spoke about the community. It's around, like, you know, surrounding ourselves around certain people. So if we're so used to seeing, you know, someone, you know, eat healthy, or, you know, someone, you know, eat fast food, or someone, just sit on the couch and don't go outside or go for a walk, or, you know, get into communities that promote physical activity, then that is what we become accustomed to doing for ourselves.
Right.
But unless we, you know, change that for ourselves, we can then change, you know, the trajectory of our generations and, you know, promote those healthy habits from generation to generation. And, you know, that's how we lead to like generational health. So, yes. You know,
Oh, I just love that. I feel like that's what needs to really happen, especially in America, with the just way that our health has kind of turned towards this chronic illness, chronic disease path, is we've got to start this. You have to stop it somewhere. You know, we have to create that change. And think about it, that it's not just about us, but it's for future generations down the line. I don't mean to interrupt you, but just like to bring some of that in, like we actually just talked about gut health on your podcast. And one of the things that happens, especially from the mother's perspective, is that you pass along your gut health and you pass along your mitochondria to your kiddos. And that sets up their immune system. It sets up all sorts of stuff. So like just making even just small changes that can have an impact on you already can set up your future kids for success down the line. And that alone can make such a big difference. And then there's also been tons of studies that have shown that kids that grew up with parents that cooked more home cooked meals also tend to eventually get over their like college years, and that it tends to be how they raise their kids as well. So just making those changes can have such huge impacts for further generations. Oh, I'm just so glad you brought that up. So keep going. But I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So, it's just, it backtracks to what you just said. It's, you know, being that change and recognizing that we have the ability to be that change. We have the power to be that change. But it just starts with one step. It doesn't have to be like, you know, like a big thing. It just one step, one action step, for us to, you know, create that change from generation to generation.
Yeah. I also am hearing, I think there's a call to our like community governments and officials and things like that. Like if there are barriers to people having safe, okay, I will say this just from a female perspective. Like if I don't feel safe going out in for a run, in a certain place, like I'm not going to go, And so I think part of that too, is just furthering the conversation to try to promote creating safer environments for people to be able to go outside and get their, you know, fitness in and all of that. Like that's another really big piece, I think, of this conversation as well, especially in communities where people don't feel safe. And just from a woman's perspective, I can definitely, you know, understand that for sure. So kind of moving on, and you actually brought this up, which I think is going to be a really great transition. You have a method that you use, and you talk and have talked quite a bit in this episode already about habits and routines and limiting beliefs. You have a method that you call the habit method. Can you bring that into this conversation as far as like how to start a new physical activity? Like, you know, for especially people who are listening to this podcast, if you are not in sports yet and you're thinking about getting into running or into triathlon or into another different type of sport, what's one way or how do you use the habit method really to bring new physical activity habits and routines into your life and your patient's life?
Well, first of all, I would love to explain my method.
Yeah.
So the habit method, so it's an acronym. So the first part of the acronym is H, and H stands for healthy mindset. And healthy mindset means that you are acknowledging your limiting beliefs, not only your limiting beliefs, but also limiting beliefs impressed by others. And, you know, limiting beliefs that because when we have limiting beliefs impressed by others, sometimes they may not be doing intentionally. They may not be doing intentionally, but we then like assume it for ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's important for us to, you know, to be aware of. So like, for example, you know, if let's say you want to run your first 5K and, you know, you don't know, like you want to run, but you don't have examples.
Where do you start?
Yeah. And it's just, you know, also realizing that, you know, you can overcome that. You can overcome to running that race. And just because you don't see examples of that, you can be the example. So it's, you know, acknowledging, you know, that limiting belief and then learning how to shift it. And that brings us to the next part, which is A. And that A is affirming and acting on new beliefs, because, you know, I love affirmations and I use them, you know, as part of my life, but it does no service to just recite an affirmation. You also need to act on the affirmation so that it can be a reality for you. So if you're thinking that, okay, I'm not a runner, okay, so like, can you walk? All right. Can you then start to briskly walk? Okay. Right. Then you can start to run. Right. So if your affirmation is that I am a 5K runner, okay, what are you doing to get yourself to that point of being a 5K runner? What is like the smallest step that you have to take to be a runner that runs a 5K?
Yes.
The next part is, you know, believing greater, because once you, you know, start walking and then briskly walk, you will then find yourself running. But you know, it's all those small little habits. They are like, and it's so important not to only just go through those small little habits, but also to celebrate them. Mm-hmm. Because you're just one step closer, you know, to where you want to be. And then you're one step closer to like where you came from, you know, like realizing how far you came to walking, to briskly walking, to then, you know, running. And, you know, even if it's just running a block, like even if you just get yourself to run a block, that is still a huge accomplishment, because, you know, before you would never be able to run a block, and now you can run a block. Yeah. So that is, you know, believing greater, because once you start to make those small habits and you start to, you know, successfully do those small habits, you realize that there's so much more in store for you, and you realize that you can believe greater, and then you can, you know, be that 5K runner, whereas before, like, you never thought you could run a 5K.
Yeah.
The next thing is incorporating change, because listen, when we're starting something new, it's a lot. Like, you know, there's a lot of mind drama that goes into it. There's a lot of self-criticism that goes into it. And
I don't belong here. Right. I can't do this. I don't look a certain way. I mean, so many things.
All of that. And it's important to realize to, you know, set up our environment to support us. So like, you know, if you want to, you know, if you want to run a 5K, you know, how about being part of a running group and being part of a community that runs, and you'll find people that will keep you accountable, you know, getting a running coach, you know, that's an, you know, another person to keep you accountable, getting an accountability partner, you know, maybe someone that can support you and keep you accountable on your running journey so that you can achieve, so you can run your 5K. So it's important to realize that, you know, like, you know, it's important to ask for help. And because this sometimes it gets overwhelming, especially when we're starting a new activity. And also realizing to include, you know, flexibility, because sometimes we create goals, but I feel like sometimes we get so like obsessed, like with the goal, like, you know, I was supposed to run 5K, but I didn't do 5K. And I'm just like, you know, I didn't do it. And it's just like, no, but like, but you created steps to get you there, right? And you're committed to those habits to get you there. So it's like also learning how to be committed to the process and not being obsessed with the goal. Because once you are committed to the process, you can achieve the goal. And also realize that you can, like, your goal is flexible. You can change your goal as well. You know, let's say you wanted to run a 5K, and listen, you have then, you know, mustered up the courage and the belief to run, you know, even more than a 5K. You can do that too. Or maybe if it was a 5K, you know, it could be 2 miles, and you can work yourself up to a 5K. Right. So it's also learning to be flexible and not being so hard and putting that pressure on yourself, because I know that you know, work with athletes, and I know athletes, they can be so hard on themselves.
I know.
Hit those performance goals. Okay. They want to beat those times, you know. It's so important about, you know, hitting, it's about performance. Am I upping my performance? Mm-hmm. Am I, you know, overcoming them? I know that, you know, that can be a lot in it, but we place a lot of pressure on ourselves, and that then impacts our performance. So it's also thinking about it that way. And the last one is transforming lives, because, you know, I believe with this process, learning how our brain works and realizing how that impacts our behaviors and, you know, how that just impacts like the outlook of how we look at ourselves and how we look at our health and fitness allows our lives to transform and allows us to become the best version, the best athlete that we can be for ourselves.
I love this so much, because it's so empowering. It's so empowering. It gives the power back to the person. I feel like there's so many things that we give our power away to. And some of those are those limiting beliefs or the patterns that we've learned from our parents or from our family or from just the communities that we're in. And we legitimately give our power away. But this method really brings it back to you and back to the person. And that is such a gift. The other thing I love about this as well, though, is that the first bit of it starts all around mindset. It starts around getting your brain wrapped around the process, which is such a missing piece, I think, in so many different programs and in so many different things that you just see, which is like everybody wants to start at the incorporating change piece, which is I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to start, I'm going to go run a mile today. It all starts around that piece. It doesn't start like you get one idea that's like, oh, I'm going to go try and run a 5K. Or I'm going to go try and run a 10K. Or I'm going to try an Ironman. But like those things are so overwhelming when you, from no matter which angle you start at, whether it's a 5K or trying to run a mile, or you're trying to do an Ironman or something else. If you look at that big overarching goal as like, that's what I want to go do. And then you start thinking like, well, how am I going to get there? It can be really, really overwhelming. And we have a tendency to just be like, okay, I'm going to do these things, but you know, when you actually look at it, people are really consistent and really good in the first 2 weeks of something. And then the things start to fall apart a little bit. And I really do think that in this method that you have, it's the power is in that healthy mindset. It's in that affirming and acting on new beliefs. It's in the believing greater. It's taking the time to really get to the root of those, which is where you see the biggest change and biggest impact. Yes, the training and the nutrition and the performance, all of that is a very, very, very important piece, of course. You can't just sit and think and then eventually get to that Ironman, but starting with this as your root, your foundation, really, I mean, it's the biggest thing that makes the biggest impact, that keeps you going, and staying flexible. Gosh, I love it.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, yes. You know, it's just a combination of what I've seen, just, you know,
yeah.
From, you know, as a physician, just like seeing how much in our own way that we get, and also thinking mm-hmm. that we don't have like the power to make a change.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you stated. It's just like, you know, placing the power back in your own hands and realizing yeah. that you have everything within you to make a change. And I'm right now, I'm just serving as a guide to help yeah. you see that. So, yeah,
oh, I just love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Are there a couple tips that you can give the listeners and viewers today of where they can just get started in a lot of this process that we've talked about today?
Yeah. You know, I would say, cause the first part of my method is healthy mindset is, you know, just, you know, write, like getting a journal mm-hmm. and just like, you know, writing out those limiting beliefs, because we like to keep it stored in our brain. It just like keeps on circling and circling and circling. But when you can actually put pen to paper and actually see your thoughts on paper and your beliefs on paper, yes. then it's like, oh my goodness, like this is the way that I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's right. Like, so from the first base, it's just comes from awareness, just awareness. That's it. Just awareness. Yes. Like, these are the thoughts that I'm thinking. These are the beliefs that I'm, you know, that I believe about myself and, you know, what I can do and like what I can accomplish. Like, this is what's happening in my brain. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that's the first step is just actually just acknowledging, like becoming aware, like awareness is like the first step.
Yes.
And, yeah. So that is the first step is just becoming more aware.
I love that. You know, I see that too. You hear it a lot. Like, oh, I could never do that. Whenever I say like, oh, I'm an Ironman, like, oh, I could never do that. Yeah, you can. But if you keep, first off, like we are not our thoughts. We have lots of thoughts. We have positive thoughts. We have negative thoughts. And people tend to like think that they are what they think. Well, your thoughts are sometimes not even your own, but we have a tendency to just believe the things that we tell ourselves. And all we actually have to do is first off, bring awareness to that. And second, be like, that's not me. I don't know where that's coming from, but that is definitely not me. And all it is it's just taking that step of awareness to be like, I would never say that to my friend. I'd never say that to somebody else, but yet I'm saying it to myself. Like, how is that productive? How does that help me? And, you know, just letting those negative thoughts just like flow right off of us and just start focusing on things that do serve you well, that will help you with, if you're overcoming chronic illness or disease, or you want to improve anything, you can improve your life just from that alone. Oh, well, for sure. I had no idea that this is where we were going to be going today. And I'm just so, I love it. This is so, I just know that this is a very, very helpful thing. It's going to help somebody. And I cannot thank you enough for being here and for sharing and being so open. Oh my goodness. This was amazing. Where can people find you if they want to come and say hello?
Yes. So for those who want to find me, you can find me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at MedFitDO. That's MedFitDO. And if you click the link on my bio, I also have my YouTube channel that you can subscribe to. And I also have I also work as a health and fitness coach. And if you want to just learn about, you know, more about how your thoughts impact your behavior, you know, I invite you to schedule a 30-minute discovery call with me so we can get through those limiting beliefs and what's keeping you stuck and figure out how you're actually really in control.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. Was there anything else that we didn't touch on that you'd like to, that you want to just cover really quickly?
Man, I think we did such an awesome job.
I think we really dug in, didn't we?
Such an awesome job.
Good.
You know, yeah, I think we did a great job, but you know, just to reiterate, you know, practicing mindfulness, right? And, you know, I know we hear a lot about mindfulness all the time, but mindfulness is just like really creating space and creating time for yourself to acknowledge those limiting beliefs. Because, you know, if you're an athlete, you know, I know you have all those races signed up. Okay. You're looking at your calendar with all those races signed up and all those things, and just acknowledging, you know, what is like impacting your performance truly, like in examining what your thoughts are and putting pen to paper and acknowledging what those limiting beliefs are, and not also feeling compelled to do all the things, all the races. What are you really trying to prove? Really. So, but I think it just takes time to just create that solitude and to create that space for ourselves, to examine our thoughts and realize by doing that, we can, you know, really transform our lives and become the best, you know, athlete, the best person that we can be. So,
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you to all of you for listening and for watching. We will be back next week with another great episode. So take care and we'll see you then. Hey, did you know that up to 70% of athletes may be deficient in at least one micronutrient, if not potentially deficient in two or more? Micronutrient deficiencies like vitamin D, iron, calcium, vitamin E, B12, B9 are super common in athletes, and they can lead to things like fatigue. They can lead to injuries and fractures, getting sick a lot and missing practice, to unexplained pain and a lot more. On the flip side though, athletes who corrected nutrient deficiencies saw improvements in VO2 max, vertical jump, grip strength, force, improved delayed onset muscle soreness, and a lot more. That's why I created the Strong to the Finish Line free guide for athletes like you to be able to train and compete symptom-free so that you can have the confidence and the power to perform at your best. Get this guide for free at drkirsten.com/finishstrong.